Blog Talk Radio.
Nights with the Midnight Bomber with Neutron Bomb and Captain B2. Pour it out thick like honey, bittersweet like molasses, seeking your proliferous journey to profit to the empathetic masses. Calling on cathartic release, expel your demons. If but for a moment increase, then cease them. Quell their influence, let them not commit treason. Now this week's focus is on Game of Thrones. We have a full board of poetry and it's fixing to be a great episode. And whilst it is not a prerequisite, we do encourage you to join the Late Night Poets group on allpoetry.com. How are you going tonight, Captain?
I'm splendid. I want to help everybody come to the dark side because we have cookies.
we have a special guest as well.
Do we?
Yes, Laurent. I'm just putting you online now.
Wait, I'll go get the red carpet.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Come on now. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Oh, thank you, dear poeticness, for joining us this evening.
No, don't go there, please. Let's just be calm. It's been a strange week, I swear.
And you come to us to help you with that?
Well, you know, I had seen the prompt for tonight, and I was a huge admirer of Game of Thrones and watched the whole series straight through when it was on HBO, and then we bought each episode as it came out year after year, and I watched all that and probably watched most of it a third time again as well, so I was really eager. But I could do nothing that even approached what I wanted to do, so you got something that's a little off kilter instead, and I am sorry.
We appreciate you stopping by, and hopefully you can hang for a bit too. Another caller. Excellent. I'll just be one moment. We've got one more caller. Here we go. Tom,
hello,
is that you?
It's Tom.
It is
That's
Tom.
Me. It's always
hey,
been
Tom.
Me. I've been in this body ever since I was born.
Are you following me? Following me, sir.
Me? What? What? Come now.
Stop.
Well, we better get this party started. I will grab. I will grab Laurent's poem first, and then Tom, you'll be up next.
Okay. Thank you.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Suppose I should get in.
All right. So, Laurent, when you're ready.
Okay. Like I said, I apologize for not writing specifically to the prompt, but it is after midnight, so almost anything goes, I guess. It's kind of dedicated to my lovely wife, who's enduring back muscle spasms following her second COVID-19 shot. I mean, there's little to do but hold her hand in empathy and hope for relief that words can't necessarily bring. That's kind of what this is about. And it's called Rare and Precious. There are no words as precious as their expected potential. In my quiet carries the weight of purpose when sphinx-like the wisdom of silence must serve. Brush daubs in questionable brilliance, guiding thoughts, newly minted coins of a realm held private, where legal tender is the color of emotion. Riptide hues surge, seaborne genuflections washing the dais in sea green and disbelief. Coral reefs of memory, dying in shades of off-white and amber. A new canvas is broached. The splash and dash of a cannibal core is achieved, bringing up red, vomitous matter in excess, excoriating me alive with its yellow bile. Stone-cold instinct triggered. Reaction is a harder pain to set aright without destruction of reason, dipped in angry rainbows, scrawled childlike in response. For to remain silent requires invasion by the external, pushing against an internal light that ignores golden flourishes, content with a quiet tongue, rare and precious in its yield, like a sigh, chopping grain against the yellow flood, bread for masses, crisp against hungry mouths, born of the oven of hands, too good for words. And poem.
Great read, Laurent. Great poem, too. And Captain, would you like to start off the comments for tonight?
I'd be more than coiled. I always marvel at your dexterity with the language, Laurent. You put things together with such art and skill, combinations that I wouldn't ordinarily think would come together comfortably, and yet in your hand, from your pen, they emerge in a union that is just so pleasing to the ear and to read. brush daubs in questionable brilliance, splash and dash of a cannibal core is achieved, bringing up red vomitous matter. So visceral, and the stone cold instinct triggered reaction is a harder pain to set aright without destruction of reason, dipped in angry rainbows. I scrawled childlike in response. That is just content with a quiet tongue. I could pick any one of the stanzas and pluck something out that is just an absolute jewel. This is a great piece. I hope the lady feels better. But if she, writing poetry like this to her, to feel better. This is beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And Tom, what were your thoughts?
Well, now that Bobby has managed to say every line that I was going to quote and read my mind perfectly in terms of the response,
I planned it that way.
There is left for me to say is a desert where I stand. So I do deeply appreciate the need for being present, most often without words, but just in the support that presence brings. And I think you caught that beautifully with the language you use, descriptions that you use, and in the end, caught it all aright with that last verse that goes, rare and precious in its yield, like a sigh, chopping grain against the yellow flood, bread for masses, crisp against hungry mouths, born of the oven of hands.
I love that
so
last
this
one.
This is how couples bring things together, is by simply understanding what needs to be done to make it work. Beautifully said.
Yeah, that last one.
To you again, too. It's been a while.
Ditto, Tom, ditto.
I'll make the last comment. That's all right. For me, I think I was drawn to, for to remain silent requires invasion by the external, pushing against an internal light that ignores golden flourishes, content with a quiet tongue. And just in general, like the vivid use of color, there's a poignancy to this piece at the moment because there's a lot of people undertaking the COVID-19 vaccination. So it's a rite of the times. As Bobby said, it has that visceral nature to it also. But ultimately, I think it captures that it is hard to be silent in the presence of a loved one who is suffering. But your pen is great piece and so very well. So thank you, Laurent.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Yeah, there are times when words, they just splash against the wall, and they don't do much good at all. Yet the warmth of skin on skin can sometimes be all that's necessary, you know, the clasping and the unclasping. But I thank you for your kind comments.
You know, that actually reminds me of skin on skin. Apparently, it's actually quite important with a newborn. My sister works in a NICU, and the babies that are away from their parents, especially at the moment with the COVID babies, they're missing that contact, and that's exactly it. It helps more than words, I think, in some respects.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, let's move on to Tom. I'll just put your poem in the forum. And Tom, when you're ready, go forth and read.
Okay, I'll grab it from the hopper. Is it just a tide? One, when the wolf howls, the sheep crowd together and bleat. One sound calls us out to care. The other makes us shiver, pull the covers tight. Do we care? Because they are a source of food, a resource to meet our needs. Predators gather only to increase their force. not to make them easy to herd. How strange it is we can play the sheep, yet turn out to have the teeth that rend and tear, the desire to feast upon those we harvest. Sheep stray. We seek them to maintain our food resource. Our enemies we may befriend, share the food upon our plate, allow to have a bed to rest, for those we respect are not the ones upon which we feed. Two. We play so many roles, betray our own hearts by serving others' desires, find those who said they love dressed in lies as they abused. Is it strange when we discover we do not know who we are, when to follow, when to lead? In the end, we are lost, howling in the dark. Unsure, we wish to be found, never knowing if those that come to rescue, come to rescue, to slay, to cry out with us. They do not know where they will lay their head, feed their belly. Can we trust the hunger? Are we ever fooled? Who is friend? Who is enemy? Too often those on my side claim my allegiance only to use me as fodder, to lead others away from their gates. The wolf in my heart howls and knows he is alone. End poem.
Thank you, Tom. That was a great read and a great poem. I think I was drawn to this section here. Can we trust the hungry? Are we ever full? Who is friend, who is enemy? Too often those on my side claim my allegiance only to use me as fodder to lead others away from their gates. I think the questions you have posed in this excerpt are philosophical in nature. And personally, I think that as a society, we are never full and we are always chasing our next milestone, our next meal, as it may be. And this was such a strong right. I could have quoted a number of sections in essence. I believe sometimes we lead, sometimes we follow, and sometimes we are the predator and sometimes the prey. But universally, we have become accustomed to picking off the weak. Quite an inspiring ride. And what were your thoughts, Captain?
Oh, my goodness. Where do I begin? This is a bloody brilliant ride. Tom, you really... created something here that is deeply profound and philosophical in its grounding. It asks questions that are not easily answered. I'm drawn to the second, the beginning of the second part. We play so many roles, betray our own hearts by serving others' desires. Find those who we say who said they love dressed in lies as they abuse. Isn't it strange when we discover we do not know who we are? This just that beginning is such a dilemma. It reminds me of something my father used to say. That he said that people find themselves trapped in jobs of expediency. And when I read that, it just, we play so many roles, we betray our own hearts by serving others. And that is just, that is a moral dilemma that I think has plagued us all at one point or another. I could not pluck any particular piece out of here and set it above the rest because it flows with such smoothness and grace. It is it's a tapestry woven of profound thought. It is a beautiful piece.
Thank you.
And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, compliment me for my use of words, yet you should be as strenuous in your compliments as for Tom, because as reiterated, or I will reiterate most of what B2 said in terms of the quality of the writing. We play so many roles, betray our own hearts by serving others' desires, find those who said they love dressed in lies as they abuse. Is it strange when we discover we do not know who we are, when to follow, and when to lead? You know, we play the wolf and sheep almost simultaneously, ready to offer control, but hesitant, always on the doorstep of deception and danger. Too often, those on my side claim my allegiance, only to use me as fodder to lead others away from their gates. The wolf in my heart howls and knows he is alone. I think we have to end up as the wolf, if only in self-defense of a common skin that offers no obvious hint of intent. Excellent piece, Tom.
Thank you.
It truly was. I think there's going to be quite a few rights to the prompt that you chose tonight, Tom. But this was by far one of my favorites. And I think the extended metaphor really played out well with the prompt that was chosen. I'm just seeing whether I had it there, but I will pick it up later on in the program, but it's the prompt about wolf, the wolf and the sheep. With that, we'll move. Do you have the prompt there, Tom, by any chance? Or did you want to add anything before we move on?
Depended upon how we survived the seeds of. Oh, that. No, I took Prop 17 and 18 both together, really. Simply because. You know, it actually started out with thinking about, you know, the whole thing in the Bible about the shepherd and the lost sheep. And and then current politics kind of entered the picture, and away we went.
That's awesome, Tom. I think, I won't go into it or I'll start getting on my pulpit, but we had a chat about it last week, and there's a lot of shit happening at the moment that isn't real good. So I think it applies equally. So, so with that, we'll move on to the next poem. And, Captain, would you be able to read the poem by Darren Mossman?
No, I live for that request. Nothing But the Bones by Darren Mossman. Weary of this wicked world and winter's icy grip, I went into my chambers for a little winter's tip. I closed the icy shutters as the gate outside did moan by spring. I feared if I not wake, there would be nothing left but the bones. I fed and stoked the fire as the logs crackled and hissed. I suffered immense sensation. Something was utterly amiss. I was encircled by glass houses where only mine was made of stones. When the storm abated, I consternate, there would be nothing left but the bones. I folded and fluffed my pillow, drew down the window shade, pulled the curtains tightly closed, fell into bed freshly made. One last night, a sovereign few remain on our crumbling throne as this tyrannical storm will undoubtedly ensue. Nothing remains but the bone. And
thank you, Captain. That was a great read. And Laurent, would you like to leave the comments for this poem? Are you on mute by chance, Laurent?
Oh, Lord, I can't get that straight, can I? Oh, well. I'm not the only one, I guess. I was in the process of admiring this for the second time. weary of this wicked world and winter's icy grip. I went into my chambers for little winter's kip. I closed the icy shutters as the gale outside did moan. By spring I feared if I not wake, there'd be nothing left but the bones. It's a beautiful little stanza that takes you someplace you did not expect, but someplace that is absolutely relatable. When he says, and there I assume he, I fed and stoked the fire as the logs crackled and hissed. I suffered immense sensation. Something was utterly amiss. You can feed and stoke the fire, and it doesn't necessarily bring you the kind of warmth that you want, because regardless of what you do or how you do it, there is a storm that remains, which will ensure, that nothing remains but the bones. I like that a lot.
Great comment, Laurent. And Tom, what were your thoughts?
Well, I found myself getting focused on I was encircled by glass houses where only mine was made of stones. When this storm abates, I consternate. There'll be nothing left but bones. You know, it's interesting that, in a sense, he plays out where he is in the greatest level of safety in the face of this storm, but in becoming totally safe, one becomes totally alone. So then the third verse takes on even greater meaning. One last night, us sovereign few remain on our crumbling throne as this tyrannical storm will undoubtedly ensure nothing remains but the bones. It's as if he's saying, you know, to sometimes be the only winner is truly a pyrrhic victory, because there's nobody left to play with. There's nobody left to take part in the universe. And then you have nothing. So there are many false victories. And that sometimes survival is vastly overrated.
Great comment, Tom. I was drawn to the same section, actually. The encircled by glass houses where only mine was made of stones. And it reminded me of the saying, those who live in glass houses should not throw stones. And it's interesting, on the second read, they're using his stones to throw at him on top of that. And for those that aren't familiar with the European proverb, it means one should not cause harm to other people if he himself is vulnerable. And to me, whilst this poem could be taken at face value, the greater metaphor is contained in this proverb, in that we as a society are always trying to throw stones irrespective of the making of our house. And as such, nothing remains but the bones. I thought it was a really clever poem. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
This had a very classical feel to me. For some strange reason, it reminded me of the Rose Hartwick Thorpe poem, Curfew Must Not Ring Tonight, because it had that rhythm to it, that almost like a dirge, but it has a haunting feeling to it, and it's a very infectious for as short as it is. This is the type of piece that just stays with you. It really has a spirit. It has a very haunting undercurrent to it. I really enjoyed the way it was written and the way it read.
Thank you, Captain. I've just put Mamula's poem on the board. I just saw that she was online about 15 minutes ago, so hopefully she's still listening. So there's a SoundCloud that I'm going to play now. It won't be a moment.
From fire to ice, we collide, we merge, we become one, completing the other, even as we stand alone in the hinterlands. back to back in the midst of foes, chest to chest under the first, comrades and lovers, both deserters. As the light fades and darkness crawls in, we make our stand, the last if we must, against the terrors of the night. But first, we lock lips for the last time.
Great SoundCloud, Manuel. And Tom, would you like to lead the comments this time?
I couldn't get the poem because I was getting Danny by Evelyn Chung.
I put that one on first. And yeah, there were two poems. You might need to refresh. I'll come back to you, Tom, if you just want to have a quick read. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It was quite an economical use of words, as Captain would say, and I think that Manuel painted a scene of enduring camaraderie, and it was a great answer to the prompt by Ygritte, "You are mine and I am yours. If we die, we die, but first we must live." My favorite part was the last stanza, "As the light fades and darkness crawls in, we make our stand, the last if we must, against the terrors of the night, but first we lock lips for the last time." The relationship between the two protagonists is dynamic. They fight together, they lay together, and they have each other's backs right till the end. Very well done. And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Unmute.
Thank you, Thomas Hughes. I'm going to hire you to be my mute. Back to back in the midst of foes, chest to chest under the furs, comrades and lovers, both deserters. Yes, we desert ours in the face of love for a new reality, more important than where we came from or supposedly headed. But no matter, the last sweetness of an embrace will suffice. But first, we lock lips for the last time. I had kind of a Romeo and Juliet feel to me. I'm sure you weren't headed in that way, but it was powerful, so I had to say it. I love the piece.
Great comment, Laurent. And Tom, are you happy for me to come back to you now?
Yeah, I'm ready. I find myself focusing on the second verse, back to back in the midst of foes, chest to chest under the furs, comrades and lovers, both deserters. The need for two people, for any person at times, to find a way to share with someone else the state they're in, even if they can't put it into words, to simply have someone be present with them, is just really vibrantly clear in this poem and beautifully brought forward, because we collide, we merge, we become one in the beginning, back to back in the midst of our foes, chest to chest. And then as the light fades and the darkness crawls in, we make our stand, the last if we must, against the terrors of the night, but first we lock lips for the last time, because even at the end of all things, having someone to share the moment with makes it far more acceptable than to be alone. Just a stunning write.
Great comment, Tom. I agree with you, and I think at the moment that's all you can hope for, is that you can have someone with you at the end, you know. And I also agree with Laurent with the Romeo and Juliet-esque vibes. It does seem doomed, but as Tom mentioned, not without hope at the end. And Captain, what were your thoughts? Yes, certainly.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Well, I guess I did. But I'm reminded for some reason of that last scene in The Lord of the Rings when the hobbits are on that rock surrounded by lava. And I can't bring to mind the exact words, but it's something about here we are at the end of it all, and I'm happy to be with you. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I do get that from this as well, that last moment shared when everything seems black and there's no place to go. I'm happy to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
Great observation.
And did you want to comment now, Captain?
I agree with Laurent. It has that underlying current of intensity to it, especially if you know the story, it has even more gravitas when you know that they're of two worlds brought together, and I'm loath to pluck out any particular stanza because I think all of it just as an entity stands so beautifully together. But it does symbolize this almost a fatal love that they're incapable of resisting. They're drawn magnetically together, and we make our stand the last we must against the terrors of the night. But first we lock lips for the last time. It has that the prompt. She, with such beautiful again intensity. This is a great piece. It's got a laser-like focus to it for storytelling.
Great comment, Captain. And now we're moving on to the poem by Evelyn Chung. I've reposted it in the board, and I'll give this one a read. It's called Danny. My queen, you forever live and I shall perish one more time. Several years are gone like snowflakes melt away in Winterfell, but I don't remember if the last moon ever shines on me, except in the memory of your long silver hair. Wind hisses and tears the surface of the icy lake. I try to keep you by my side, which never is enough. Fire and blood is what you are. How lavish your crown was. You traded for dusting bones, city sacked, heads fall, bloodshed as river runs. The snowy grass tarnished where we used to lay, no longer covered by the birch tree's shadow. What am I now, my queen? I shall die into a phantom. End poem. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
I'm reading the author's note. It has an interesting, it gives a flavor to it. It says, narrated in the voice of Jon Snow in Game of Thrones and after Vesper's Parousia by Louise Gluck. So I'm going to have to look that up. But again, we've got an intensity here of fatalistic, doomed love. But this the protagonist, my queen, you forever live and I shall perish one more time. This the person is just wherever she goes, he's fated to follow. I can't remember the name of the character who started out almost being her assassin and ended up being her her bodyguard. Wind hisses and tears at the surface, icy lake. I try to keep you by my side, which is never enough. Again, beautifully expressed, very. Very layered writing.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great comment. And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, I can not unmute this time, am I? The love that Jon Snow had for Daenerys was really fire and blood, which is what the poet describes her as. But when you fall in love with fire and blood, you almost take on those traits, that way of being, that strength of emotion, it's almost a violence of emotion. How lavish your crown was. You traded for dusting bones, cities sacked, heads fall, bloodshed as river runs. She was uncompromising in many ways in her use of force and death to achieve what she wished. And yet that doesn't seem to matter in this case, because he will die into a phantom as she survives a measure of his love for her and where he places himself in any kind of hierarchy. A brilliant piece, really.
Great comment, Laurent. I think I had two favorite parts. The snowy grass tarnished where we used to lay, no longer covered by the birch tree's shadow. I thought it had great use of metaphor, particularly of love gained and love lost but never forgotten. And the poem has an almost regal tone to it, very suited to a Game of Thrones contest, and it captures the spirit of Daenerys Targaryen very well, and the infatuation that Jon Snow had for her. But I don't remember if the last moon ever shines on me except in the memory of your long silver hair. Very well done. And that was written to the prompt, My Reign Has Just Begun. And with that, Tom has had to leave, so we'll move on to the next poem. And Captain, if you could give this one a read.
Certainly. Never Quite a Lady, by Vicky Moore. Climbing trees, barefoot in blue jeans, I was never quite a lady. Smoking and drinking, dancing in bars, I was never quite a lady. I tried wearing dresses and makeup, but I was never quite a lady. Surviving abuse, surviving pain, fighting for others undergoing the same, an advocate speaking for the voiceless, using words as my sword and shield. I was never quite a lady. I am a warrior. End poem.
Great read, Captain, and thank you, Vicky, for the poem. This was written to the prompt by Arya Stark. I'm not a lady. I never have been. That's not me. And I think Vicky has captured the essence of the prompt while giving it a modern-day lens. Arya Stark was a warrior. She, too, survived abuse and pain. And fighting for others undergoing the same, there is both a strength and a vulnerability in this poem. And the repetition of I was never quite a lady could be viewed as resignation, but it builds in power and empowerment to the final line, I am a warrior. And what were your thoughts, Laurent?
Well, there is, I agree with you, there is an empowerment here. But we also have to look upon what we describe as a lady. I mean, for years, a lady was years, centuries. A lady was self-effacing, obedient, not contesting anything the husband wanted, really. If you think about it, 125 years ago, I think it was legal to beat your wife with a broomstick. Doesn't make it right, but it was legal. So when you're not a lady, it's really is surviving abuse, surviving pain, and fighting for others undergoing the same, an advocate speaking for the voiceless. And I don't know, I think the lady is a warrior. Absolutely, she's a lady and a warrior at the same time. So I might argue a little bit with I was never quite a lady, I am a warrior. It all depends on what you think a lady is. And she's a complete human being, I'm sure. Nice poem.
Excellent comment, Laurent. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
I was actually swallowing. It was a very powerful personal. I think it was charmingly colloquial, especially it appreciated the refrain, "I was never quite a lady." It's a very relatable piece, speaking of ignoring convention and being your own woman, being your own person, while showing courage and strength and character and helping others who underwent similar experiences. The writer is fiercely proud, and she is indeed a warrior.
Great comment, Captain. And I'm just loading up the next poem. Okay, and Laurent, if you could give Jeg325's poem a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
Happy to. Okay. A little refresh. This is called Chances by Jeg325. Rising wind screams, a shrieking savage, battering iron doors erected for defense and shadowy halls. We huddle in dark fear, terror-stricken with an unseen presence, afraid to roam down unknown passages because dreams paint black nightmares. Ghosts of our creation haunt castle walls, mocking lost dignity with baleful stares. Yet each corridor leads us somewhere. Might not one lead to our freedom's gate? If we curl in fetal position, a fearful child, death will wave a sickle once it's too late. Choose to survive by opening closed eyes. Raise your ears. Hear voices that are wise. Since 52 hallways exist in our stone fortress, that's 52 chances before hope dies. End poem.
Great read, Laurent, and thank you, Jeg325, for the poem. And Captain, would you like to lead the comments this time?
Certainly. The rhyme scheme in this is so subtle, it sneaks up on you. You don't catch it unless you really, really look at it. It's the fear, the defense, presence. It's got it in there, but it's not in your face. It's a subtle rite. It also has some great passages. Ghosts of our creation haunt castle walls. And there is some thought and wisdom in here that takes you beyond simply this piece into just actually to real life. We create our own demons very often. Mocking lost dignity with baleful stares. Choose to survive by opening closed eyes. Raise your ears. Hear voices that are wise. 52 chances before hope dies. It's got an affirmative ending to it, but it's almost a cautionary tale. It's very, very well written.
Laurent, you gave it a read. What did you think?
Well, I thought that he grabbed the reader in this immediately. Rising wind screams, a shrieking savage, battering iron doors erected for defense. It's almost as if there's a safe room where you can hide and escape that which batters out you because you're afraid to roam down any other exit. We have our little safe place. Let's go there. And yet, 52 corridors are nothing to be afraid of because, as the poem says so succinctly, that's 52 chances before hope dies. There's not just one direction to go to escape malice, to escape ill, to flee before a flood. There are other ways that you can go, and you should not curl in a fetal position, a fearful child, because you will have death waving a sickle over your head. So I thought that message came through very strongly, and it's a really nice take off of Arya Stark's quote, all holes lead somewhere.
I agree with you there, Laurent. It's almost as if in curling in that fetal position as a fearful child, you go from that 52 chances before hope dies to just one option through the inaction. And I think that Jake325 has emulated the prompt very well, which was all calls lead somewhere. Where there is a way in, there is a way out. Fear cuts deeper than swords. And he captures the hopelessness of fear that can overtake and ultimately provides a call to arms to fight for survival. And I think it captures that interminable spirit of Arya Stark, and definitely touches on fear cuts deeper than swords. Great little poem. And I'll bring up the next poem. Won't be a moment. And Captain, did you want to do a quick introduction of the contest that you started this week? Whilst I...
I've got a glass of water here and I aspirated when I heard my name. What did you want me to do now, please?
Oh, that's all right. I've got it. I've got the poem lined up now. But later on in the show, if you just want to have a tab open and we'll go through the contest that we've got running the future. So poem here is by a new writer to the scene, Linda MB, and it's called Suicide Blonde. I bind ambition to my naked chest. A suicide vest stitched from mother's skin bequeathed me on her death. Should it explode, my bloody broken flesh will fall, defiling all who get too close. Every fool who mocks my flaxen fairness, smelling weakness, they do so at their peril. I will rise from dust and rubble, crushing them, as they too late confess the stench was all their own. I will press my hands against my treacherous burning ears, so they never hear the ringing of surrender's tolling bells. I will never take a backward step from any foe, not least the love I hold within my arms, as he resolves to raise his knife and pierce my heart to save me from myself. And so on. And Captain, would you like to start off the comment?
Sure. There's a ferocity. And great storytelling. I mean, so compact, and she's got the ending as he rises, as he resolves to raise his knife and pierce my heart to save me from myself. I mean, and that it just takes it right to her end through the story, and it just it captures it chronicles her movement through the story with great precision It just delineates everything that she was, that essentially defines her as a character. And the only reason I chuckled at the beginning, because actually the title itself has a double meaning. It's a bit of a joke. Do you know what a suicide blonde is? Died by her own. Blonde is died by her own hand.
Oh, okay.
Instead of bottle blonde, it's suicide died by her own hand. That's why I laughed when I said, because it's a clever a play on that word arrangement. But she's got a great piece here, a great intensity.
And great comment, Captain. And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
I thought the initial two lines were eye-opening. In reality, I bind ambition to my naked chest. A suicide vest stitched from mother's skin bequeathed me on her death. Reference to a deeper Game of Thrones family, a character we don't hear, you know, enormously about, but absolutely true. Stitched from mother's skin, something that's in the DNA of the individual. And by binding ambition to my naked chest, a suicide vest, the author has created a marvelous metaphor for danger, for, well, defiling all who get too close, every fool who mocks my flaxen fairness. And that's a stab against any blonde joke that has ever been written, okay? Yes. I think it's, you know, if you look at true blondes, blondes who don't color their hair, as against people who do color their hair blonde. Well, though the artificial blondes may be that way because they want so desperately to be blonde. But in blonde, there is the sun. There is a pureness that we all admire. There is even a sexuality that is captivating. Otherwise, why would blondes really figure so heavily in the lexicon of our of our urban mythology? You have to think about that sometimes. But for her to press my hands against my ears, to shut out voices that are ready to surrender because she will never take a backward step from any foe, she's implacable. Not to bring in golf, but Tiger Woods, you know, said, I don't want to just beat my opponents. I want my foot on their neck. I want to destroy them. I'm paraphrasing here. But it's that way with any number of conquerors. If you go back in history, they look at Genghis Khan. I hold within my arms as he resolves to raise his knife and pierce my heart. Even if he does me unto death, I am not going to change. I will never take a backward step. That is her to the teeth. I admire this poem. It hewed so convincingly against the tree trunk of the prompt. Very, very nice.
It reminded me of one of my favorite passages. You know how I like the Cork films. It's from, I believe, 1982. It was one of Schwarzenegger's.
You have a disgustingly good memory, damn it.
I can't help it.
I can't do what you do. No way.
It's Conan the Barbarian, and it's 20 minutes. I timed it. It's 20 minutes into the film before Schwarzenegger says a word, and his first utterances. The Mongol warrior, the lord, says, "Conan, what is best in life?" And he goes, "Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of the women." And it reminds me of that, because it is the utter decimation of your enemy.
Hey, I got a strange feeling you just liked his bulging pecs.
I like watching him breathe. Yeah. Okay. I don't mind. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right, though. What a success for a guy nobody can understand.
There's a poke in the eye. I can answer a question for you. You asked why blondes figure so prominently in our lexicon, the question is, why do blondes have more fun? Because they're easier to find in the dark.
Oh, like the joke. All right, I'll give you one.
So, For the listeners that aren't up with the Game of Thrones, The season ended with her lover slash nephew, Jon Snow, the rightful heir to the Targaryen crown, stabbing her to death in the Iron Throne room to prevent her from further acts of destruction. And I just thought I have to pen, or rather say, it was a great poem that ripped with the storyline of Game of Thrones very well. But I'm also very impressed by the comments that you both provided in relation to the poem and its subtler metaphors there. Not that there's much subtle about this poem with an opening like I bind my ambition to my naked chest, a suicide vest stitch from mother's skin bequeathed me on her death. Should it explode, my bloody broken flesh will fall, defiling all who get too close, every fool who mocks my flaxen fairness. And I think that that Linda has captured that Daenerys is a force to be reckoned with. And
yes,
that was adeptly captured in the right. And I think if you look at it from a modern perspective also, how many people have been thwarted by their good looks, I suppose to say, in that they're not taken seriously, even if they do have other aspects of their personality that are often overlooked. You know, I suppose you could touch on that as well, and that's probably been like just from some of the comments that even Laurent made in relation to what is lady, she was struggling with that throughout the series or the books because of her good looks, and they were not always kind upon her. So with that, we'll move on to the next poem, and I'll just double check. I'll get Laurent to read this one, actually, if that's possible.
Certainly. Anything's possible.
My fountain pen.
And I do like fountain pen. Injustice has Injustice has no nobility in the blood. It's hard to put a leash on a dog once you put a crown on its head. Tyrion Lannister. Injustice has no nobility in the blood, builds kingdoms of monstrosity. Its rising is nothing but tyranny, tyranny and pandemic loss, where mountains unwilling crumble after they willingly paraded for their maker. Either you uproot it before it sprouts in you, or it will destitute you from your humanity, or implore for a cure to utter bitterness. Seek for a loyal physician to relieve your pain. Free your will from its wickedness and whim. Or sip after sip, you shall swallow it all until your heart is drowned, wrecked. You struggle, scream for help, but even death won't hear your despair. Your soul withering amid poisonous bliss. Cast it all out, the malicious mind. No evil, no devil is ever a man's friend. An ugly face it is, uglier as it is a right. Your eyes revealing the thorns as gardens, given a smell of musk. Marveling the sterile grains of sand in awe of full barrels, as if wearing genuine luster, the luster that will deprive you of all light. You were fashioned in with perfection. Never rest until you are perfect. That injustice doesn't rein your heart. And you, a king, blissfully rejoicing in the arms of peacefulness and peace. End poem.
Excellent read, Laurent. I think the hook at the beginning was great. Injustice has no nobility in the blood, builds kingdoms of monstrosity. And the poem takes a somewhat philosophical tone to it. At one point, I thought it was referring to the ills of drug and alcohol addiction, but I think drinking from the poisonous Chalice simply is a great metaphor for any vice, whether that be money, power, lust, greed, substances, and the list goes on. And it was a great submission for the prompts by Tyrion Lannister. When I was actually doing my pre-reading, I was listening to the Game of Thrones original soundtrack in the background whilst getting my pre-comments done. And I must say that the song that I was listening to this poem really stood to the strength and message conveyed in Fountain Pen's poem. And I think my favourite part was either you uproot it before it sprouts in you, or it will destitute you from your humanity, or implore for a cure. So out of goodness, seek for a loyal physician to relieve your pain, free your will from its wickedness and whim. It was such an epic stanza and equally applicable to Game of Thrones or the modern day era we currently find ourselves in. Very well done. And what were your thoughts, Captain?
I agree with what you just said. I mean, you plucked a piece out of that is just profound. Either you uproot it before it sprouts in you, or it will destitute you from your humanity, or implore for a cure through utter bitterness, free a will from its wickedness and whim. I agree. There's a message there that if you find yourself on a slippery slope, you need to redirect your feet in a different direction. It's like you have a friend that you know they've got their feet firmly planted on the path to self-destruction, and no matter what you do, you cannot dissuade them. And that's what I see. This is the second stanza is referencing that path to self-destruction. And if you don't change the path, it will be to your undoing. This is a great, epic piece. I mean, it has a very classical flavor to it, and even the opening stanza, it just grabs you. Injustice has no nobility in the blood, builds kingdoms of monstrosity. And very befitting of the character quoted, because he was a very profound and cerebral, and because of his disability, it gave him an insight on life that was rare.
Excellent comment, Bobby. And Lavon, what were your thoughts?
Well, it's funny. Every poem that we come to seems to be almost better than the last, and they're all good.
yeah.
They make you think. These aren't poems that are just scatterbrained, throwing words around for no reason. There is some very strong message in this. Injustice has no nobility in the blood, builds kingdoms of monstrosity. Its rising is nothing but tyranny. Tyranny and pandemic loss, where mountains unwilling crumble after they willingly parade their maker. To me, this is an absolutely delectable piece, despite the darkness. Because injustice in any guise, corporate, societal, personal, no matter its form, cast it all out. The malicious mind. No evil, no devil is ever a man's friend. And, you know, ironically, injustice has ever been the course of man. Each direction taken by one group, somehow seemingly injurious to another. And whenever we see injustice, I think it's so important that we stand up and say something, not just glance and then look away. Outstanding piece.
Great comment,
Laurent. It was. I think today's episode has had an outstanding quality to it, and I definitely agree with you there, Laurent. We've been very lucky tonight for the pen and the ink penned by our poets. And with that, we'll move on to the next piece. And Captain, if you could give this a read.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. The quality of the rites in this has just been absolutely stellar. Age of Dare by Gerald E. Green. A lion doesn't concern himself with the opinion of sheep. Tyrion Lannister, Tywin Lannister. The sheep, the shepherds talk among themselves behind closed doors, feasting late. Their wine flows endlessly, stolen from merchants. Friendly looking dogs, ready and eager to bite, guard the sleeping sheep. Decisions get made affecting the flock. The sheep have no say. Medical experiments receive approval during this age of dare. In the morning, dogs herd the sheep, forcing compliance. Any sheep found resisting receives a wound in its non-compliant hind leg. The Worldwide League of Shepherds is in agreement. The sheep have no say.
Thank you, Bobby. I really enjoyed the extended metaphor. I think it was very well crafted. This age of dare to which Gerald refers has nothing else at its disposal but the effects on society from the pandemic are long lasting. I could write an essay on this, as I'm sure many people have their own opinions about the pandemic and vaccination and the like. It is a personal choice, but I do believe desperate times call for desperate measures, and one of them is to get vaccinated. So I was having a look at Gerald's comment, and he actually wrote that he wrote this for a friend who has been banned twice by Facebook. This is an age of both economic and medical dare. And I don't know, there's a lot of stuff on social media at the moment in relation to the Sydney lockdown. A lot of it isn't very helpful. I think it's probably a similar situation across the Big Lake, so to speak. There's more focus on social media than scientific journals. I'll leave it there. And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, the sheep have their say. And that's one of the problems right now. There's too many sheep all baying very loudly. Ah, they've all got their little principles. And, you know, and these are people who have no connection to history whatsoever. You could beat them over the head with a stick for a day and they wouldn't. And begin to imagine, oh, let's go back and look at the last pandemic. How were things solved? What happened when polio was a scourge on the children of this land? Were there public protests against the vaccination? Really? The Spanish pandemic? The Black Plague? When towns would close the gates to their walled cities and allow no one in? They knew how disease was communicated. The sheep have a say in this case. The sheep have longed for a shepherd for the last 2,000 years to come back. The sheep want a shepherd, and they are so easily shepherded. So I'm there's conflicts in this piece, which is well written, but it's I don't know. Do you see what I'm trying to say? I'm not saying it very well.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. You've been quite diplomatic about it, too, I think.
Well, I'm a firm believer in vaccinations. I mean, you've got to be crazy not to be.
Yeah. Look at the science, people. That's all I'll say. Yeah. And, Captain, what were your thoughts?
This is a very interesting piece in that it is a very thinly veiled social commentary. The age of dare that we're in right now has our cultures deeply divided between those for vaccination and for masks and social distancing, and those who fly in the face of science and reason and poo-poo the things that would otherwise be prophylactic measures. I think thinking about it, we live in an age, I think, where there is, I think part of the pervasive infection is also people, our culture has been infected with this sense of entitlement. The individual, the good, what is it, the message from Star Trek, the needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many. And that's the seems to be the prevalent thinking.
Yeah.
Instead
yeah.
of the needs yeah. of the many outweigh the few. And people are just like, they're loath to surrender any kind of personal convenience or personal comfort in light of it. And it extends itself to even to the security of going through the security you go through in airports. What was the hue and cry of why do I have to take my shoes off? Why do I have to take my jacket off? And people railing at the loss of personal freedom.
Karens of both sexes, I think. Can I just say very briefly that when Tywin Lannister delivered that line, a lion doesn't concern himself with the opinion of sheep. In those days, that was devastating. I love the character of Tywin as uncompromising, and I won't call him evil. I think he's a product of his times. He knew what it took. I love that character. I was sad to see him go.
He rather went in a rather undignified manner too, but I think
like Elvis.
That seems to me what I'm reading here is this sense of personal entitlement that seems to be pervasive these days. I think threatens the well-being of the society as a whole. But yeah. I really appreciate the message that this piece has delivered.
Thank you, Captain. And next we'll move on to Kel's poem, Kel Smiles. I'll give this one a read. It's a bit of a change of pace, a bit of frivolity, and it's called Nothing's Real. I tried something new last night. Everyone said one is enough, so instead to prove them wrong, and I don't like being told what's good for me, makes me a bit of an old rebel, huh? I had to buy, because is one ever enough? Damn, but that brownie was good. In hindsight, if I only knew to listen, one bite was truly good, but two? Well, two put me over the edge, oblivious. Silly me, I thought I could forget that thought looping, over and out, gone. I could no longer feel my body, didn't know if I was breathing, hell, didn't know if I had to pee. Somehow, even on my rubber legs, I got back across the street, home, thoughts, whirring and looped, in and out, this isn't real being the strongest one. Next day, I told my family, don't let me ever try that again. They laughed and said, we tried to tell you, Mom. I know I'll never hear the end of it. That, my friends, is all too real. End poem. What were your thoughts, Captain?
Well, I'm reading author's note. The prompts that were selected is why is it that when one man builds a wall, the next needs to know what's on the other side? And then never forget what you are, the rest of the world will not. Wear it like armor, and it can never be used to hurt you. This is a very tongue-in-cheek, self-effacing piece that it takes a really confident person, secure in their own personality, to admit their own error in judgment. One does it with such panache that I can't help but enjoy the storytelling in it.
Great comment, Captain. And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, I tried something new last night. Everyone said one is enough. So instead, to prove them wrong, and I don't like being told it's good for me, makes me a bit of an old rebel, huh? You know, she's not the only one who ever underestimated the herbal brownie, a chewable nirvana that can propel you to the outer limits if you exceed the wisest limits. It's a smile-making poem because for those who haven't, you will discover it. And for those who have, it's got to bring a relatable smile to mind. So I liked it a lot, being one of the stupidest ones at a certain point.
I was on mute. It was my turn now. This actually reminds me of my youth. This poem, I didn't just take one extra bite. I think I had half a hash cake. And
I was
transported to another dimension for about 5 hours. I was simultaneously asleep and then ravenously scouring the kitchen for food. So, I learnt my lesson the hard way. To learn patience, that's for sure.
Sounds like a fond memory.
You were in low Earth orbit there. You were a Leo satellite.
Oh, gosh. So this poem, I thought, was a brilliant tangent for the contest. And, I was a bit reminiscent and... Yes, I'll never forget that time I decided to eat half a hash cake. So, that brought back some memories.
That's fun.
Oh, God.
Oh,
yeah, the ills of you. And with that, we'll move on to the next poem. And there's actually a SoundCloud for this one. So I'll just cue that up. It's Versus Goliath, Dark Reality.
Dark Reality by Versus Goliath. There lays our dirty little secret, all the hidden kindness we forgot. Therein lies moments of regret, haunted burial spots, all we got. Castle King and a checkmate, the Game of Thrones, one fate, safety and illusion, merely bait, crimson wedding, save the date. Tinctures of a human soul, puncture wounds, mountains, cold, tinkering physicians, clay, mold, functional hound brothers, hold, skull crushing, screaming, headaches, interesting to see what pressure makes, drew ire of peninsula's venomous snakes, queen, princess of sun, deadly mistakes. There lays our dirty little secret, all the hidden kindness we forgot. Therein lies moments of regret, haunted burial spots, all we got. Moment of fracture, a house divided, won't even hold the sword, bastard. Decapitation splendor feels one-sided, swallow fate of a reality and game hard. Survive, do what it takes to survive. Arias of ice, become the face of death, stay alive. Tell him not today, stay alive. Surgical slice, reveal killer underneath. Frozen skin, icy beard, crown of zero Kelvin. Frigid giddy smugness, features of hero elven. Chosen kin, species, herd, destroy the humans. Rigid orders, clumsy certainty of those undeadened. There lies our dirty little secret, all the hidden kindness we forgot. Therein lies moments of regret, haunted burial spots, all we got. Fall, prideful lions fucking fall. Where it all started, always recall. Fall, wisdom cripple after the fall. Somehow in the end stand tall. Three-eyed ravens caw, caw. Simply as prescience foresaw. All for thee to decide, caw, caw. Have to hold the door for us all. Stand tall, hold the door, stand tall. Fall, the prideful lions fucking fall. Stand tall in the end, just stand tall. Have to hold the door for us all. There lies our dirty little secret, all the hidden kindness we forgot. Therein lies moments moments of regret, haunted burial spots, all we got. And boom.
Wow. Epic SoundCloud verses.
My goodness, yes.
When I was reading this, I did pick up on the lyrical nature of it, not just because of the chorus, but the rhyming scheme that was employed in it. I think, as Richard would say, it riffs with the prompt quite well. And I think I was drawn to the onomatopoeias in the second half, and just the rhyming scheme as well. Three-eyed ravens, core, core, simple as prescient foresaw, all for thee to decide, core, core, have to hold the door for us all. And the cadence actually increased in speed. And I have to say, I applaud you for getting to the end of that SoundCloud in this poem, because, number one, there was a lot of pronunciation, and number two, you sped it up. So from a performance perspective, you had little time to breathe. So I was very impressed. And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, it's a pretty spectacular piece in what it attempts to do, and probably succeeds in doing, I might add. It takes images of many of the characters and portrays them in her poetic language, while always referring back to that dirty little secret, all the hidden kindness we forget, always going back to the love of a brother for a sister, both emotionally and sexually, which I think was a very strong force throughout the entire series. I mean, it's one of the cardinal rules that we all know, you know, a brother will not lay with a sister, if I can paraphrase something. You have the, moments of fracture, a house divided, won't even hold a sword, the bastard. Decapitation splendor, feels one-sided, swallow fate of a reality, in game hard. That stanza, others, arias, etc., referring to the characters, but always coming back to that dirty little secret. I thought that the poet did a great job at grabbing portions of the series. Certainly, the prompt, if you waste time trying to get people to love you, you'll end up the most popular dead man in town. There's a wisdom to that, and there's a wisdom to a lot of the things that came from that series. I think that's one of the reasons why these poems are so effective in what they're providing us. There's inspiration in each and every one of these, and this one's certainly not the least. Excellent piece.
Great comment, Laurent. And Captain, what were your thoughts on the poem?
I am in awe of the attention to detail in this piece. It is so meticulously picks a little minutia and threads it through to make it's a chronicle of the story from start to finish with wonderful little morsels like Crimson Wedding, Save the Date. That was the first one that caught my eye. I thought that was clever. But it's Safety and Illusion, Merely Bait. And it talks about the puncture wound, tinkering physician's clay mold, functional hound brother's hole, how the hound's brother, the mountain, gets turned into a zombie, and then the skull crushing, from the duel to the death. Just like I said, detail in here. Frozen skin, icy beard, crown of the ice, the walking dead. There's a great little piece of the three-eyed raven. And here, as a refrain, he's got Hodor's name. Have hold the door for us all, which it turned out that's what Hodor actually meant, was hold the door. And it was just, it was a revelation. But it is just, and the fact that he riffed it and did it all with what is referred to in some circles as patter talk, is just beautifully done. I mean, this is a skilled, detailed, very impressive write.
Was he trying to rap, do you think?
I think so, but if you listen to the way he did it, it sounded like the first song from the movie Music Man.
Well, damn your memory again. What are you, how do you pull this crap out?
You got all the drummers.
I wish I had your memory. I'd be a millionaire.
Can't help it.
Yeah. My God.
But it's called,
father had such a memory, he did not pass on to me.
But there's in the musical Music Man, at the beginning of the film or the play, there's a drummers, traveling salesmen were called, and they're all on the train. And as the train starts picking up speed, the song, they're not singing, they're talking, and they're talking to the rhythm of the train. And this is called patter talk, and that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I do.
Yes, that's called patter talk, and that's
nice
what this
rap.
Is. Great piece.
All right.
I love this piece.
I thought I lost you there for a second, Captain. Oh, gosh. That was an excellent comment. And we'll move on to the next poem. I doubt we're going to get through everyone, but we will most likely have room for carryovers next week at the end of the program. So next we've got a poem by Matcha A called Avocado Toast. And I'll give this one a read. Yeah. Astride a mountain of men, women, and they, them, the mountain built of we. You cannot passively sit on such a throne on and of us. Countless pricks dripping carotid, round-bellied children without bootstraps. Who reads our sins to judge who eats passionless mechanical forces of nature or not? Narrow path of hopeless eyes and lips that want crampons dig in on every step to summit, reassuring ourselves of our humanity. They made choices and ate too many gourmet, green, gooey, blackened bread and poem. And this was written to the powerful have always preyed on the powerless. That's how they became powerful in the first place, by Tyrion Lannister. And Laurent, if you would start the comments.
Yeah, this is not a brevity, but it comes close. You cannot passively sit on such a throne on and of us. Brings to mind an image of a mountain of bodies on which one or a few of us managed to sit, countless pricks, dripping carotid, round-bellied children without bootstraps. Who reads our sins to judge who eats? I can only say one thing. Wow. That's so powerful. So strong. Who reads our sins to judge who eats? I mean, the implications of that sentence, as you said before, you could write an essay. I almost feel like I could write an essay on that alone. Passionless, mechanical forces of nature or not. This is a splendid piece.
Agreed wholeheartedly. I was drawn to the first two stanzas, and I think they encapsulate that prompt I mentioned very well, sitting astride a mountain of the palace. And as you mentioned, you do get that visceral image of a pile of bodies. And the avocado toast reference at the end with the gourmet green gooey blackened bread, in Australia at least, it's become synonymous with the bourgeoisie. And I like how Animacha has incorporated that into the last stanzas. The rulers make decisions far removed from the people whom suffer the consequences, whilst those in power get ever more comfortable. And I think just in general, the more comfortable they are, the more chances there is of them being offed from the throne. And I think that was certainly a synonymous with the Game of Thrones series. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
I thank you, by the way, for the clarification on the avocado toast. I was one that was an obscure reference for me, but having it clarified at the end, it just makes all the more difference. This has a very dystopian flavor to it. Astride a mountain of men and women. Again, I agree. The first two stanzas are just they set the tone for the whole piece. And it speaks of the proletariat as simply cogs in a machine, almost like when Charlie Chaplin got trapped in the machinery and gets turned around in the different gears. It's viewing people as simply a means to an end, and not as individuals with spirit and soul. It's a very very creative, very imaginative, very cerebral, right?
Great comment, Captain. And I'd almost say I'm with the first stanza at least. It does lend itself to a brevity, at least in its economical use of language.
Yeah.
And I think That was the final point I'd make on that. The message that it conveys with such a small word count, even if it isn't technically a brevity, it has the flow of one. So, yeah, very well done.
Yes, favor of it, yeah.
And next we've got a poem by Longfellow Serenade. And Captain, if you can give this one a read, please.
Certainly. Called scars. Though wounds may heal, they always leave a scar. Some seem like they are mended, but below we cannot see how fragile they are, and they may fester with the slightest blow. Sometimes we think our injuries are healed. We think we're past the suffering and pain, but it's not gone. It's only been concealed with one wrong touch. They're bleeding once again. Although some scars are seen, some are obscure. The injuries to feelings often hide. They leave us feeling weak and insecure. The hardest wound to heal is foolish pride. Just one unseemly word can help reveal emotion scars don't truly ever feel. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great read, and thank you, Longfellow, for the poem. I think there's a lot of wisdom to this, right? Sometimes wounds appear to be a flesh wound when really they are flesh-eating bacteria waiting to take out a limb, or far worse, our life. And invisible wounds are by far the hardest to heal, in my opinion. And it reminded me of the adage, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And I think Longfellow has effectively encapsulated that words can cut deep. And I think it was a very, very well done poem. And what were your thoughts, Laurent?
Well, it's a powerful piece of truth. Just one unseemly word can help reveal emotion scars don't truly ever heal. I thought the poet summed up things perfectly in those lines.
Thank you, Laurent. That was a great comment. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
I was impressed with the fact that Longfellow's Serenade took the rigor and discipline of a sonnet and captured so much emotion and so much insight. This is very insightful. Has a lot of, I think, a very deep and profound wisdom to it. I think having most of us having at one time or another fallen prey to the hurtful word would agree that sometimes you'd rather someone strike you than say something mean or spiteful to you. It just like he says in his last couplet, just one unseemly word can help reveal emotion scars don't truly ever heal. This is a very elegant piece of wisdom.
Great comment, Captain. And Laurent, would you be able to read Poetic Picasso's piece, please?
Certainly. This is called Betrayal is the Poison. Betrayal is the poison of a scorned lover, whose invidious veins are like prickly thorns bleeding from a bitter carmine rose infused with the burning fire of carnal desires. I am a mighty gladiator of colossal strength, but a wretched slave and lover of thy whims, the faithful soldier of thy golden throne, and the vigilant fighter of the arena. I was not born a vain nobleman of royalty, but men do not discard me with their guile, for my dagger slices the sly serpents whose feisty tongues bleed profusely into the effusion of the pools of blood. I am the breath of the dragons of thy behest, and my allegiance is to serve thee always, as long as thou art my mistress and goddess, and I shall fight thy battles of conquest. Only one woman can claim to tame my will, and 'tis my queen that stands before me, whose seductive words of love and passion penetrate through the steel of my armor. Oh, so sweet is parting from thee now, for I, who have fought for thy beauty and honor, but thy spell has condemned me so blindly beyond the harsh echoes of the walls of Eunaki. Vulgar Margolis, all men must die. End poem.
Excellent read there, Laurent. Very well done. And thank you, Frank, for the poem. I think it had such a strong start, a burning love and desire through the lens of a gladiator fighting for the honor of his goddess. Betrayal is the poison of the scorned lover whose invidious veins are like prickly thorns bleeding from a bitter carmine rose infused with the burning fire of carnal desires. The language is rich and nuanced, and I think when it comes to Frank, chivalry is certainly not dead, and I see that in his poetry. Very well done. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
I agree that the language is rich and nuanced. I have almost the feeling of a Samson and Delilah situation where here is a mighty warrior who is brought low by his love of a woman. And there's only one woman who can claim to tame my will. And there's one thing about it that I've noticed in being able to appreciate Frank's work over the many months is there's no ambivalence to his writing. There's always a very strong, powerful, focused undercurrent of emotion through the whole thing. The tide of that emotion carries you through the entire piece like a flood from start to finish. It has that kind of emotional power to it. It's always a real delight to read his work and his with the pen. His brushstrokes are very artful in his use of words.
Excellent comment there, Captain. And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, poetic Picasso is a prisoner of his passions, and thankfully so, because he introduces into his words, into his poetry, into his lines, the absolute essence of what his heart, I think, views almost as a holy grail. He puts into words the emotions of men for their women with an unerring ear. Words that might stand by themselves as cliche take on a polish and a position, I think, in his lines that help him transcend a common word, if you will, and endow it with a certain, well, I'll use the word passion again, that passion that lives within him, that is able to structure lines like these without being repetitive. Excellent piece.
Yeah, his work has an elegance to it that suffuses everything he writes. But you're right, it's very, very passionate, and we're the beneficiary of those passions.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next one we have SoundCloud for. So it's Radio Bravo's poem, and I'll just hit play now.
Novel Eccentricity, a poem by Radio Bravo. That's me, by the way. Cloudy days balmy cast haze, stuck stricken lackadaisically awake. Pressured sockets, pulsing eyes, hour sleep lethargy cauterized. Scanning tomes, covers blind, lift the heft, stitched leather bind. Novel plaque and twitching grasp, collapses track hard and paperback. Saliva finger folds, turn the page. Weighted rage, drawn lines on stage. Warping brain to hollow plane, horizon uncontained in worlds again. Limbs creak, strain, skin sag, meal. Lips dry, mouth, eye, cheek, lie, keel. Age paid, corpse laid, withered train. Agile brain pumping veins, reading rain. Bowing head shooting arrow pain. Lives unchained, chapters claim. Words spilled ahead, taking aim. Growing mane, so burden drain. Augur youth to body tryst. Face grayed in hoary list. Ashen tough patch and bald scalp. Catacombs call in tunnel route. Papyrus door leads paved road. Castles rise and dragon soar. Monsters die and night swords roar, rearing tapestries from the floorboard. Sharpened speech the authored preach, speaking that reach to people teach. Stars that blink sink crumbling wink, stain the ink to the paper's brink. End poem.
Great SoundCloud there, Radio Bravo. I like the tongue-in-cheek introduction. I thought that was very cute. Although, like, from a technical perspective, I just have to say that you excelled with the rhyming scheme in this poem. And for me, it's probably one of the finest examples of rhyming that I've read with a very varied, extensive vocabulary that I've seen in a long time. The concept of using two prompts was stellar. I really think you did a great job of commingling a mind needs books like a sword needs a whetstone if it is to keep its edge. That is why I read so much. And then also, there is only one God and his name is death, and there is only one thing we say to death, not today. So very well. It's so very well done. And I was just taken aback by the rhyming scheme. It's very rare to see somebody do rhyme with the same level that they would do free verse. And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, interesting that you say that, my dear, because it's almost as if he's taken rhyme into the free verse world. I mean, I don't think you can call this traditional poetry by any stretch of the imagination, yet it works so well as poetry, with inside rhymes, outside rhymes, near rhymes, perfect rhymes. It doesn't matter. It is so well done, and the words, the word choice is so carefully chosen in this. Papyrus door leads paved road, castles rise and dragons soar, monsters die and knights and swords roar, rearing tapestries from the floorboard. And maybe not the best thing to illustrate his novel use of language, but certainly the one that tells me this is an entrancing poem on the magic and the importance of reading. I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too. Captain, what were your thoughts?
I agree. He's a very ingenious use of two prompts, and I see the first one in the beginning. It's scanning tomes, covers blind, lift the half stitch, leather bind, novel plaque and twitching grass collapses, track hard and paperback, and then saliva finger folds, turn the page, weighted range drawn lines of stage. And you can see that this is a very carefully crafted piece. It seems like work is, and he's fairly new to AP. He's only got like 58 pieces out there, but its quality. I mean, this is something that is very carefully crafted. His use of language is very strategically weighed and surgically maneuvered. It's got a precision to it that's almost scientific in its approach. It's very admirable the way its formatting is. I like the message. I really admire the craftsmanship. And so does my cat.
Oh, gosh. Look, we have time for one more, and I'm just going to put it on the board now. It's a brevity, and then we'll wrap up after the comments and call it a day. So this one's by Jamie Johansson, and it's called Dogma. Billions want to believe God floats in the sky, convictions that harden when they are about to die. Preachers and priests getting rich off the rumor, spreading their beliefs like a cancerous tumor. Sweeping claims based on pure imagination, swallowed by billions without the least cogitation. Hunt down all dissenters, all heretics, stretch them, press them, stone them with bricks. Find them and try them and burn them for kicks. End poem. And
what
were your thoughts, Captain?
Oh, this is a brilliant brevity. It flows beautifully. It delivers its message with precision and economy. I really enjoy and almost a bit colloquially. I really enjoy the take on the prompt is spot on.
Thank you, Captain. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I despise television evangelists. I don't for a moment say that people don't derive some comfort from it. But what they do and how they do it, for the large part, is absolutely ridiculous. And I think that their so-called churches should be taxed like any other business, because that's what it is.
Yes.
It rips off the soul. It rips off the soul.
Yeah.
Hear, hear.
I agree. You know, I was reading this article when I was trying to find something to reference for Memuel's poem, and it actually related to this poem. It was basically saying that spiritual near-death experiences were in fact the brain hallucinating, as the activity before death in the brain is quite aroused. And they've actually discovered this in rats and then also extrapolated it into human near-death experiences as well. And I just thought that was an interesting segue there with the poem. But I think that historically he's really hit the nail on the head with that last stanza there. Hunt down all dissenters, all heretics, stretch them, press them, stone them with bricks, find them and try them and burn them for kicks. Look, I have no problem with people having their own personal beliefs, but some of the atrocities that have been carried out in the name of organized religion need to stop.
Oh.
And if there
yep.
is a God,
yes.
he would not be happy with the state this world is in and the hypocrisy. And I think,
as a weird aside, can I ask you, do you know how many American Indians were alive before Columbus set foot on this continent?
God, no.
Probably a shit ton more than there are currently.
There were 60 million.
There
today
you go.
There are 60,
That's exactly
today there are 60,000. And many of them
That's ridiculous.
Were killed in the name of religion.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I just think that in and of itself is practically genocide. You know, there's no
That's
other
right.
word for it, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And yeah, just I'll round up by saying not being taught to question is very dangerous, especially in the hand of fundamentalists, especially in the age of social media. And I agree wholeheartedly with both comments you've made. And all the comments tonight were really insightful. So I'll just wrap up by saying thank you, Laurent, Tom, Bobby.
Oh, yes, thank you very
and
much.
All the poets. And Bobby, if you want to just quickly mention the contest we've got going. We've got 90 seconds.
I will move expeditiously. The one we have ongoing, we have two right now. One is called T-Shirt Wisdom, and the other one is called Can You Handle the Truth? And we've got entries on both of them, and they're one is a bit more contemporary than the other, but we've got some very insightful pieces already out there. People are enjoying the T-shirt wisdom, and I'm getting some great feedback from Can You Handle the Truth, which was me paraphrasing one of my favorite characters. You can't handle the truth. Oh, and,
all right.
And visions of the shape of things to come. Well, I think we might have one on quotes on hypocrisy.
Ooh, that I can get my head around. I think that sounds like a great contest.
I thought you'd like that.
So, yes, that'll draw out the cathartic for sure. All right, ladies and gents. Let's call it a night.
Right. Thank you, Laurent, for staying with us. Appreciate you having you here.
Yes,
great
thank
show,
you so
Laurent.
Much.
A pleasure.
Ciao a tutti.
All right, catch you guys later.
Night-night. Sleepy tight.